There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What is up, Bison fans? This is the host of the show, Ross Uglum, publisher of Bison Report on 24/7 Sports, bringing you this Thanksgiving week edition of the pod. I want to be very clear with all of you that this is what you're going to get this week. We've got no game coming up in football. Bison basketball just wrapped with Idaho. Won't play for another week when they go out to Indiana State for a big-time Summit versus Valley non-conference game. And so in that vein, we just don't have a ton to talk about. You got the emergency playoff pod with me and Trevor. Now you're going to get some more Trevor, but we're going to give you some Nate right away as well. First thing off the bat, Trey Lance was named a Walter Payton finalist, and Matt Entz was named a finalist for the Eddie Robinson Award. As far as some basketball injuries, we had Rocky Cruiser out with a knee, missed the Utah Valley game, and missed the Idaho game. And Malik Harden-Hayes just was sick tonight, had an illness, stayed at the hotel, didn't want to get his teammates sick, wasn't able to go. So neither of those things are long-term. Rocky's knee injury was not something that they had long-term concerns about. Went 1-1 without him, losing at home to Utah Valley and winning on the road at Idaho in a big, big way. And to talk about that Utah Valley loss briefly, because I kind of already covered it, but to talk about that Utah Valley loss and the Idaho win, we bring on North Dakota State men's basketball analyst, Nate Zastro. Nate, how are we doing?
Doing good. It was good to see a win tonight. Last week was a little disappointing on Saturday. They got up to a pretty hot start. I think they were up 6-8 points early on there, and then really struggled guarding the ball. And credit to Utah Valley, they did have some guys that could really break you down off the bounce. You can see why they probably could play with Kentucky a little bit. No, they shouldn't be able to play with Kentucky, but those type of guys can get to a young team like Kentucky is, and they really hurt NDSU off the dribble. I think it hurt a little bit not having Rocky at the rim. We had a small lineup in there a lot, so those guards thought that they could take their guy one-on-one, and there wasn't really anyone at the rim to alter their shots much. They had a great comeback, but just got down a little too much, and it was a little too late. Had a chance to make some plays down the stretch, just didn't do it. I think it was definitely a disappointing loss. One you want to get at home. You want to protect that home court, especially against non-conference teams. But like I said, credit to Utah Valley. I mean, they've won a lot of games the last few years. And, yeah, Mark Madsen brought in a lot of new players. But he was a hard worker, grinded out, and he's teaching those kids to play well. They're not too consistent right now, but I think they're a team that's going to be around that 16, 18, maybe 20 win total in the WAC this year, competing with New Mexico State. Tonight, Idaho, they've struggled early on. I think they had one Division I win. They lost two exhibitions to non-D1s. Two of their wins are non-D1s. So it's a team that's going through quite a big transition. Their head coach got let go for NCAA violations. They have an interim coach in there right now trying to get the permanent job. So they're trying to find their groove. Kind of stunk for them there without their leading scorer. Not sure what was up with him. I think it was mentioned he was in a walking boot. So he was out tonight. But I think tonight was more about this Bison team finding their groove, and I think they did that, especially in that second half. I know you texted me early on and were like, they're already getting it handed to them. It was 9-0 to start the game. I mean, that's not the recipe to win on the road. It's tough to win on the road as it is, playing well, but I'm glad they found a way to fight back. They went on a pretty hot streak in the second half. They hit 8 threes. So I think that was nice to see. find some different contributions from different guys. One stat that is kind of crazy, which I wrote about in the post game, is 38 of their 59 shots were from three. That's usually not what you want to see with how we've been shooting this year. But it did get it done tonight. But it's something I don't know if we're going to shoot 38 threes in a game, we better be hitting them. 36.8% isn't terrible. Better than what we've been shooting. But I think Coach Richmond will want to see him getting to the rack a little bit more. And yeah, we were down Rocky and Malik, who are two post players. But something to just take a peek at going forward.
Yeah, for sure. They shot the ball a lot closer to their slash line from a year ago. They were in that mid to upper 30s, you know, as a team shooting three. And that was closer to, you know, we mentioned this too. You know, we talked about this. The team as a whole, with bringing all the same guys back that spent a whole summer in the gym, they're not going to regress, or they're likely not going to regress. These shooting percentages are likely going to end a little bit better or pretty close to the same as they were last year. So you look at where they were coming into this game. NDSU's got some hot shooting performances ahead of them, because basketball is a game of averages, and eventually North Dakota State's going to get to their average. It might not happen, you know, after three games. Like the next three games, the Bison might not get back up to their season-long shooting averages, but over the course of the next 10, 12, 14 games, I would guess that NDSU is going to end up about where they ended up a season ago, because these are talented kids, and you know, those guys were good shooters a year ago. I'm not here to really believe that they're all of a sudden going to be poor shooters now. I will say one thing about that Utah Valley loss. Two things, actually. One, TJ Washington is the reason NDSU lost that game. He was a point guard for Utah Valley, and he played absolutely out of his mind. Made contested shot after contested shot, including some monster threes. Honestly reminded me a little bit of the way that John Conchar finished the Fort Wayne game last year in the Shack, and just didn't allow his team to lose. The second thing would be that from a hype perspective, I don't know if I've ever been part of a more excited Shack than when Tyson made that dunk to cut the lead to two. The place was absolutely rocking, and no, it wasn't, you know, to capacity, but there were plenty of folks at that game, and it was loud. It was loud, loud. And unfortunately, sometimes only comebacks can, you know, or comebacks or last second shots are the only way to get folks to get to that level. But it was really fun to be in the arena at that point, because it was crazy, crazy loud. So, yeah, moving towards that Idaho game, you know, the Bison started out rough. A 9-0 run by Idaho. As you mentioned, an Idaho team missing their best player. And this was an NDSU team where you could tell they were missing Rocky Cruiser and missing Malik Harden-Hayes. And now Malik wasn't yet a huge part of the game plan, but Rocky is. And it opens up a lot of spacing for their ability to get to the rim when Rocky pulls his guy out to the free throw line. You saw it against every team. I mean, when Rocky pulls his guy key extended and pulls the big man out to the three-point line because they have to defend Rocky's ability to shoot it, Vinny can get to the hole without the trees in there. Tyson can post up. Tyree Edie can get to the hole. Even you saw a couple times against Utah Valley, they posted up Jared Samuelson, which was a new wrinkle for sure. But the Bison didn't start this game out great. That is for sure. Kind of scratched, clawed, took a two-point lead into halftime, and then put the absolute hammer down, 41-26 in the second half, ended up winning the game 70-53. And I think if you're going to take kind of a glass half full look at this thing, here's what needed to happen. The Bison needed to blow out Idaho. Well, they blew out Idaho.
They had a really, really strong second half. I think, yeah, eight threes. And, I mean, that lead went from two to 10 just like that. And then they kind of just rolled from there. It was nice to get a little spark from Jackson Notek in the first half. I think he needs to be shouted on there. Yeah, he only played 4 minutes, came in, got a rebound, got an assist, hit a three. I think his offensive abilities is something that you might need to throw him in there for 4 minutes just to see if he goes and hits a couple shots. I mean, he's very gifted offensively, and with the struggles that this team has had with some dry spells here, I think he's a kid you got to see what he can give you, even if it's only for a 4 minute stretch here and there. I think this team's playing well enough defensively. I mean, they're allowing around 60 points a game. They're playing well defensively as a team. So whatever that coaching staff thinks that he may lack on that defensive end, which is probably, I'm guessing I don't know why he's not playing more, but I'm guessing that's the reason. Whatever he lacks on that end, I think that team defense has been pretty good, that he's really offensively gifted and it can help them out when they can't score. I mean, the bench, if you count Edie, Hunter, and Notek, they're 8-for-13 tonight. That's really good production from the bench. 24 points. They hit 6 of our 14 threes. I mean, that's the type of production and why NDSU can use their depth going forward. Vinny had a little bit of a struggle shooting tonight. Obviously no Rocky, so they had to find ways with different guys, but I think that's why they can use their depth. They're a very deep team, but it was nice to see a spark. Cam Hunter's been really, really good. Great spark off the bench. Another 13 points tonight, 3-for-5 from the three. Just he was very efficient. And then, I mean, Tyree Edie, he hit a couple big shots, but you look at a stat line, 8.6 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, that's as steady as it gets, and he's the type of guy, I mean, 31 minutes, he can really be an X factor for that team as kind of the guy with Cam off the bench to give them another scoring punch.
Yeah, if you're looking for Notex minutes, I don't think you need to look a lot further than Chris Quayle. He has really struggled offensively this season. Another rough performance. 10 minutes, 0 for 4 from the field, 2 fouls, 2 rebounds, and a turnover. That is not going to cut it on the offensive end. It's a club that, as you mentioned, is not really struggling with team defense, which is where Quayle pitches in. And right now, he is not a black hole because he doesn't shoot it enough, but he's a non-factor offensively, and I think as the season goes on, they might have to make some tough decisions as far as, is he defensively that much better than Jackson, where Jackson's offensive gifts are not needed? That's not something that I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure that's accurate, or I'm not sure that that's what the deal is. Two guys I really want to just shout out because I think their contributions were kind of quiet, but I think they're specifically excellent in the way that they just fill the stat sheet and do all the little things. And that's Sam Griesel, really filled it up tonight with 11 points, 7 boards, and an assist and a block, just doing absolutely everything the team needed to get a win. Big-time offensive rebounder. Sam had 3 O-boards, 4 D-boards, just really doing a little bit of everything for that group and playing defense, and honestly, playing a lot of center, which, you know, for a kid that was playing guard wing in high school 2 years ago, to be playing the 5 at Division I is quite something. And then Tyson Ward with his 9.6 board, 4 assist, 1 block, 1 steal type of night. You know, for a senior like him, who I think, you know, probably when he arrived on campus as a freshman, had these expectations of, you know, leading the team in scoring his junior and senior year. And now with him kind of deferring to Shahid as the primary option on offense to play defense, to rebound the ball, and to just absolutely fill up the stat sheet. I was really impressed with Sam and Tyson tonight.
Yeah, they definitely are guys that are great second scoring options. I mean, there's going to be nights where Tyson's going to get a matchup that he can really exploit. Sam's just kind of going to do what Sam does. He's going to try to take you off the bounce. He's going to shoot open shots. He's going to play, be one of the hardest playing kids on the team. He's going to crash the old glass. Like, he's going to do all the little things that Coach Richmond wants him to do on any given night. And I think he loves that role. Tonight he hit two big threes. Tyson's just one of those guys. He can be a matchup nightmare. When he's got his motor on, he is a matchup nightmare because he can shoot at the three. He can take you to the post. He can defend the crap out of you. And he's the type of those two guys besides Vinny, I think can be really big key pieces, especially in that starting lineup before they get into their bench.
Yeah. And that's, they're going to have to find out what they want to do with Witz. I would guess this was a season high 20 minutes for him. And you mentioned the high volume of threes, you know, being shot, shooting the three at 37%. That's just fine. But you saw a lot of five out because of the zone and, you know, someone kind of threatening the free throw line, someone running the baseline, just basics of zone offense, but no true post threat. Fortunately for NDSU, their ball movement and their ball handling was excellent to the point where they were getting a lot of open threes. Now, they weren't making all of them, but they were making a decent amount of them when Idaho did decide to go zone. So that's encouraging, especially, you know, we mentioned, and this is kind of the last thing I want to touch on here, we mentioned just how good these guys have been defensively, and they were allowing 62 points a game coming into this game. Obviously, the 53 points that they gave up tonight's only going to help that. The Bison are not probably where they want to be, I would say. At 5-3, I would tell you they would want to be, you know, 6-2 potentially. I think they saw this schedule and probably thought 7-1 at this point in the season, but they just aren't scoring the ball in the way that they need to score the ball, and ultimately their defense is keeping them in those games. 45 points against Corpus Christi, held Stony Brook to 64 but got the loss, held Utah Valley to 68 but got the loss, Mayville State to 53. Obviously, that's a non-D1, but you just see the consistent theme is that this team is going to guard you. And if they get to the point where they get closer to shooting at 40% from the field, 42% from the field, 35, 36, 37% from three, and around 75% from the line, all of a sudden you can add 6, 9, 11, 12 points to these end of game totals. And I understand that that's not, you know, just how basketball works. You don't just add to the point total at the end. But my point is, if the offense becomes just a little bit more efficient, the defensive effort and defensive ability these guys have to switch 1-5 is really, really messing with teams. And it messed with teams all the way from the level of Idaho to the level of Kansas State, who, by the way, you know, has lost one game, and it was on the absolute last possession to Pitt. So it was a good K-State team that NDSU lost to open up the season. Obviously, Utah Valley also, you know, played Kentucky tight. So no bad loss, I don't think, on the schedule quite yet, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, if like you said, they're playing pretty unbelievable defensively. Now, I know there's always ways that you can watch on film and get better, but if you told Coach Richmond he's going to be allowing 60 points per game after 8 games, he'd say, oh, we're 7-1, 8-0. It's the efficiency on offense. Like you said, a couple of those open shots that they missed in some of those games, if a couple of those go down, I mean, they have wins. I mean, they lost by 6 to Utah Valley, 7 to Stony Brook, which was after fouling at the end. Kansas State, if they hit a couple shots in that second half, that game comes down to the wire. Just a couple little things, but it's good for this stuff to happen early on in the season.
And Stony Brook's got a good body of work so far. You know, 5-2, Overtime loss to a good Yale team. Not completely embarrassing loss at a nationally ranked Seton Hall team. Like I said, not a bad loss on NDSU's record yet, but Coach Richmond, not exactly a moral victory type of guy.
No, and he's not. And you want to get that Stony Brook and Utah Valley game, but it is teams that have won 20-plus games the last two seasons. Utah Valley, I think they made the semis or finals of the WAC last year. Stony Brook, it's been right there in the conference with UMBC and Vermont. Those are really quality mid-major programs. It would have been nice to get those wins, especially on a neutral floor and at home. But these offensive woes, like you've said, I don't. The numbers are going to play out. Stats over a year-long period. Stats typically don't lie. That's kind of the saying that coaches have. Stats don't lie. So over a long period of time, those stats are going to even out. If NDSU keeps playing the way they are on the defensive end, those offensive stats will slowly creep up and get to right where they were at last year, maybe a little higher, maybe a little lower. And that's going to equal – I mean, they can rattle off a bunch of wins in a row here with a pretty tough December schedule, but definitely some winnable games there.
For sure, and we'll keep you guys updated. Obviously, the game that we mentioned out in Terre Haute, Indiana, against the Fighting Larry Birds, if you will, and the big game on the Saturday of the opening playoff round against the winner of Nicholls State and UND. That's going to be an awesome game of Bison Athletics. Get to the playoff game, especially if it's UND. And then get your ass to the shack because Steve Forbes and East Tennessee are coming, and that is just a fantastic matchup. All right, thanks, Nate. We're going to roll to some football coverage. All right, right now bringing on Bison football analyst Trevor. Trev, how are we living, buddy? What are we doing for Thanksgiving?
Living large. So we are going to head to my brother and sister-in-law's house in Bowling Green, Kentucky. My brother-in-law, Chan, he's the head golf coach for the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. So
go Toppers.
Go Tops, yep. They had a good year last year. He had a golfer.
He had a dude. I remember that. He had a dude.
Yep. So crazy enough, the guy that finished second overall was from Georgia Southern, and that was where he came from. He was an assistant there.
Okay.
And so the guy that he was with for 2 years at Georgia Southern that he would walk the course with, he finished second overall. And then I can't remember where Billy finished. He finished like in the top 25 somewhere, but played outstanding at Nationals. And then I think he just made it through Q school. So could see him on the tour here soon.
For sure. Yeah, I've got to get in touch with Chan and see if I can't get that kid sent up here for the member guest. A little sandbagging.
Hey, we might have to, man. If there's you got to have a ringer. We just won't tell people, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think he's about a zero. Maybe he's a one. I'm not sure. Looks pretty good.
Do what
good.
You got to do.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so going back to this SIU game, I thought honestly, the first thing I'll say is I was impressed by them. I was impressed, especially, you know, we talked about the 2-9 seasons and the 4-7 seasons and what Nick Hill's doing, I think is really impressive at not an incredibly easy place to recruit to. It is reasonably close to Chicago, but it's not like Carbondale's a nice place. And so just impressed with what he's done. I thought Coach Roll had a good opening script again. The early down runs I was getting a little frustrated with. I even tweeted it out. I said, boy, a first down play action call would get about a million yards because they were selling out, man. They were ready to go, but third down was no problem.
So we'll, I'm sure you're probably referencing old Jimmy third down. I thought T Roll was spot on to start the game. Then of course it doesn't hurt when you have Kobe Johnson having the most patient run of all time. I don't think I've ever seen a run like that, but kudos to him. Jimmy Kapores, he ended up with six receptions, and I think 10 of those were for first downs on third down. So he showed out, Illinois native, So I'm sure he had friends and family, or maybe even some former opponents on the other side. Don't really know, but good for him to get it done in the home state. But yeah, like you said, pleased with T-Roll's opening drive. He always seems to be prepared because those first 10 are always scripted. I'm sure that's how he follows it still. But SIU was a good football team, man. Those guys, it's unfortunate they're not going to continue on within their season, but those guys impressed me, and I knew that it wasn't going to be as easy as on paper would say.
For sure, and you know, we mentioned Jimmy Kapuras, and it's somebody I want to talk about. And, you know, I got to say, not a guy that gets a ton of love, a ton of conversation, a player that is really kind of stepped into Darius Shepherd's role. And granted, not as the lead receiver, obviously that's either Watson or Sproles, depending on the week. But what I'm saying is that slot receiver has been, I mean, since your guy Ryan Smith and RJ got a little work in there, and then Darius, and they have really featured that spot, whether handing the ball to him, throwing it to him. Third down has been a big down for those guys. And while it's been exciting to see the development of a Zach Mathis and of the two guys that I just discussed outside, yeah, I mean, I think you have to also talk about just the level that Jimmy Kapuras has been playing on, and how unbelievable he's been on money downs, and just how physical they, you know, some of these catches are, because that guy gets whacked.
Yeah, I mean, he's not huge in stature. He's only 180 pounds. He's a little taller than what Ryan was. Sorry, Ryan, if you're listening. But yeah, he's got 25 receptions on the year. And they all seem to come at moments that are important. That's what it seems like. It seems like he's always catching the football at a time NDSU needs it most. And that's what you like to see, especially out of a senior, the only senior in that group right now. Especially with last year not getting a ton of snaps. So he has stepped up big time. I think it was your interview that you guys talked about him filling in that role for Shep and how many receptions needed to be filled. And he has more than done his job. The way he finishes plays, the way he's catching the ball in traffic, he's just getting his job done at an exceptional level. He's not going to have six receptions a game like he did this last weekend. But if the situation calls for it, he clearly can make that happen. And it makes me proud to see, just because you got a guy who's gritty, who's getting the job done in the run game. He's finishing plays. He plays for the guy next to him. He's not about himself, clearly, because he wouldn't just take any transfer from Western Michigan. And then he has a game like that in his home state, has a season high with 80 yards. Don't know if that was a touchdown or not at the end of the first half. I couldn't really tell. I was cleaning out the baby bottles at the time.
I don't think
you don't think it was. Okay. So, but either way, phenomenal catch to at least grab the football. So he is capable of making those plays, and that's what you want to see. I mean, you got Phoenix and Christian, but when you have Jimmy Kapuras being able to be that third complement, that does more for an offense than people even realize.
For sure. And you mentioned it. I want to kind of get your take on it, because it's not one of my great areas of expertise, but I feel like you see young kids at the running back position, and Bruce Anderson got a lot better at this over the course of his career. They just want to go, and they're not going to be the ones to hang out and hang out and hang out at the point and press in the hole and being patient and patient and patient. And so I just want to have you explain to me how difficult or how special that run was by Kobe Johnson.
So sometimes, I mean, fans have seen it. They can see it with their eye. It doesn't take that long to figure out, but sometimes plays take time to develop. Sometimes the hole that the run was designed to go to opens up late for whatever reason. Sometimes the original hole, like if you're on an A-gap power, sometimes it's not exactly the A-gap that's going to be the hole that's open. It's just that's getting reps with the ones and getting reps with the guys that you know can move some people around and there wasn't anything there for him right away. And he understood that, so he wasn't quick to go like you saw him do quite often earlier in the year. I firmly believe that that touchdown run was due to coaching, and to Kobe's credit, listening to that coaching, because this kid at the beginning of the year, we were talking about him when he was making his first big plays. I was saying how physical and fast of a runner he was, and he certainly is, but that was being noticed because they were getting him on outside sweeps, and that's designed a little bit differently than this up-the-gut run, but he was always very quick to just try to hit the hole and get north and south. And that's certainly great, and you want to see that out of guys, but if your hole that you're designed to run through is not there right away, be patient. Don't sit there and just try to run up on a guy's back because you have to, and it just muddles up the pile, and you know it's a standard 2 to 3 yard gain. If you know something could develop, just be patient. Get behind your big boys, and as soon as the hole opens up, you go. Coach Polisek was famous for saying, if you like it, take it. So what he meant by that is if there's a gap and if there's a hole that you see, take it. And that's what he did. He waited for that to open up and develop. I don't know if that was exactly designed or not. I'd have to watch it over and over again. But you have a true freshman that is able to utilize that type of patience and then hit the hole. Samuel Jury was phenomenal at it. And one of his most famous runs was 2012 Georgia Southern when he busted that one for about 50 on the far sideline. Similar type patience. So it's very good to see a young guy have that type of ability because it shows he's very coachable and he's only going to get better. And I was just thoroughly impressed overall.
Yeah, it's hard not to be impressed with that kid and, you know, excited about the future. Certainly with him and Jalen Bussey. Also, a guy like Seth Wilson coming back with as young as Cofield and you know, even Sabian Clark, who hasn't got a ton of run this season. But, boy, they are they're really impressive, I think, with, you know, their youth and skill at the position. Speaking of skill at the position, Williams Jr. was amazing. Really, really tough. You don't see a ton of missed tackles from North Dakota State usually. They're very sound. Braun and Ince have them that way. And at least through the first half, that Wildcat quarterback, Williams Jr., was really, really impressive.
I mean, the kid's a load. I mean, he's 239. He looks like he's about 250, but he can move. You know, he's not a 4.4 burner. He's not even a 4.5 burner, but there's not one guy bringing him down. And anytime you have that type of weapon, he reminds me of a faster Jewel Hampton. I don't know how many people remember Jewel Hampton listening to the pod, but this was a running back. He was a transfer from, I think, Michigan State that came to Southern Illinois and was a load. This kid was thick, strong, and would just lower the boom. This Javon Williams is very similar to him, just more athletic and much faster. And so that combination can be deadly, and there's a reason why they're using him in that Wildcat. And this kid is very, very good at it. The fact that he was a freshman impressed me. I did not know that until the middle of the game. But, man, I tell you what, he eclipsed 1,000 yards on the season because of NDSU. I think in the preview pod I said they likely wouldn't get there with that. Boy, did he prove me wrong, because he's rushed for over 100 yards in four of his last five games. I think this kid's going to be a problem for NDSU in future seasons if they're playing Southern Illinois. That I don't know for sure. But if they do, this kid could be a load. And I'll make the reference again. The Indiana State running back, and I always forget his name, Shakir Bell. Shakir Bell reference. Clearly a different type of player than Shakir Bell. But the same type of problems could occur if you get in a dogfight with the Salukis in the future and Javon Williams has the football.
Yeah, I mean, certainly be interesting to see how they continue to design their offense. I'm not sure how old Kare Lyles is. I didn't check. But it just seems like their best offense was him and the Wildcat. Now, I don't know if you can do Wildcat for 60 plays. I think that becomes difficult. But can you design a Tim Tebow, Chris Streveler type, you know, that kind of an offense around a guy like that? Maybe, you know, maybe. And hey, maybe some year that's good enough to go 8-3 and get into the playoffs. I think that he is problematic, and maybe they do get a legit quarterback in there, and then he becomes more of a once in a while kind of guy. And I think that is maybe even more valuable when it's a change of pace as it is now. And maybe that was why it was so successful against North Dakota State. And that's one thing, you know, that we just wanted to mention is that, you know what, SIU's good. They proved that they belonged on the field with NDSU. And you know what? There have been a lot of teams that the Bison have played that have failed to do that and failed to prove that they belong on the same field with the Bison. I really thought the Salukis were a quality football team.
By far, they deserve to be in the playoffs. No questions asked. The selection committee, Greg Seitz, you heard him say it on the selection show, it's because of their record against the playoff field. Fine, fair, whatever. I get it. You do have to have a justification. He gave his answer. They weren't consistent in how they seeded the rest of the field using that criteria, so I'm not going to buy it. I'll argue it just because they do belong. It is what it is. I'm sure they're disappointed, but they have an exciting future having a guy like this that they can build some things around.
Absolutely, and you know, it's just another contender in that room for sure, and another one of those Indiana State style teams that. Who knows? We'll find out next year if they're legit or not. And I thought NDSU really answered a lot of questions in the second half. They kind of struggled in the first half and didn't play up to their ability, as you mentioned. Thought the Jimmy Kapouras thing at the end might have been a touchdown. It was at least close. They I think, would have felt a lot better about the first half had that been a touchdown. But the second half was Bison football, in my opinion.
Right, and I talked about this in my game preview, but I fully expected that game to be tight. The first half, I didn't expect it to be tied, and that's where I think SIU showed that they can play with the Bison because it was 7-7, and it didn't look like it was NDSU just shooting themselves in the foot. They were doing some things that were not indicative of Bison football, but a lot of that was due to what SIU was doing. So the eye test can tell you a lot. That clearly was, but in the end, there's more depth, there's more skill, and eventually, ball don't lie. So shut them out in the second half, 14-0, which I thought was going to happen. Thought the offense would score a little bit more, but again, that's a testament to SIU and how they prepared for the game. Those guys were ready to play, and they held them to 21 points in a game that they needed to show that they belonged for playoff reasons. Unfortunately, that wasn't enough, but you know, NDSU was able to shut out SIU in the second half. That goal line stand was phenomenal. And I believe that was Javon Williams that had the ball in that fourth and goal. So great job by Code Green just making a play when it mattered most because, you know, there was a minute to go maybe. But you get an onside kick, you never know what can happen. Seen crazier. So great job making the plays when it mattered the most, which is the second half, and that's Bison football.
For sure. And, you know, got out with a win, ended up 12-0. I think that's pretty big time. I think that's exactly what they were looking for, even though it might have not been 48-3. And maybe it wasn't the type of day Trey Lance envisioned himself having. 13 for 23 isn't a normal Trey Lance completion percentage. 146 yards on 23 attempts is not, you know, your normal Trey Lance yards per attempt, but a decent day on the ground, including that 34-yard touchdown. If you were looking for the game, the mic drop game, saying I am the Walter Payton Award winner, you did not get that on Saturday.
No, and it's not – NDSU is not a stat-driven school. I mean, you just find
certainly
a
not.
Way – yeah, I mean, you just find a way to win the game, and that's what matters most. And I think, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you never really know. We could play the what-if scenario all night long. But if you put Zeb Nolan back there, are the Bison 12-0? I don't really know. You certainly would like to think that they are. I think Zeb is good enough to get the job done. But is he going to do the things that Trey Lance could do? terms of the excitement, in terms of zero interceptions, in terms of the pass efficiency. And I don't see anybody else that could have done that. And the fact that he's a freshman, I mean, we talk highly of this kid every week. Not the Heisman / Walter Payton-esque number performance you're going to look for, but he made the biggest play when it mattered the most on his long touchdown run. And he found a way to get his team to 12-0, and nobody else in the country can say that.
Absolutely. And you mentioned it already, but big time finish on the goal line by Code Green, stopping Williams Jr. on another designed wildcat, you know, quarterback draw, quarterback power, whatever you want to call it, another designed wildcat play call. And that was just finish the game. They probably were going to win, honestly, even if they score there. NDSU was still probably 90%+ chance to win that game, just based on all the things that would have to go wrong for that not to happen. But I think 21-7 was important. I think that stand was important. I think finishing that game was important for this defense for sure. All right, let's get into a couple quick regular season awards before we get out of here. Want to just check with you real quick on your non, because I think the first one's pretty obvious, but your non-Trey MVP.
Oh, man. I wish I had more time to look at this. I'd probably say Ty Brooks. You know, coming into the season, he was my favorite player on the team. He still is. I love that kid to death. I think he represents the community well. I think he represents North Dakota State well. So that alone just, to me, has some bias. But he leads the team in all-purpose yards. He leads the team in rushing. So for that, I mean, I think that's kind of a given. It's hard to really say anybody else if you're going outside of that. And I'm corrected on that. No, he does lead Trey, okay. Yeah, he's got Trey beat in rushing. So, yeah, it's definitely Ty Brooks. And kudos to him because he's had a great career and he has represented the Bison very well.
I'm gonna give another kid a shot at that, and I'm gonna go with Christian Watson, and that's just because of all the things he does for the team, as far as the jet sweep stuff, the vertical threat, run after the catch. There are so many things that he does with the ball in his hands that just allow other things to happen for North Dakota State, running against lighter boxes, giving Trey a huge catch radius, just over and over again, finding ways to make plays in the game. And as a guy that I just think, if you're going to pick someone who isn't Trey, the running backs have such an equal share. And the other guy I was honestly thinking about was Raidens, as wild as that sounds, just because I think he's the best left tackle in all of FCS football. But I give, you know, Kobe and Cofield and those guys just as much credit maybe as I give Brooks. And maybe that's wrong, but I just have kind of that sort of opinion that the backs are not a dime a dozen, but they all seem to have equal amounts of success. So I'm going to go with Christian Watson. All right, your defensive player of the year.
No questions asked, it's Derek Tuska. That kid is an absolute force. He does more for that defense than anybody, I think, can realize. He's got 10.5 sacks, 6 QB hurries, 3 pass breaks up, 3. I really butchered that. 3 pass breakups.
Right.
And that kid is just a specimen, an athletic freak show. He'd have more tackles if teams did not game plan to run away from him.
I'm with you on Tuska. I think a lot of folks would have thought it was nuts coming into the season for it not to be Jabril Cox, but it hasn't been. And it's not that Jabril's played poorly. I just think that he is further away from the ball and kind of NDSU's up a lot, and sometimes not in super competitive games where they're going to send him on a blitz. They're just going to kind of let him go out there and shut down whatever tight end or slot receiver he's in charge of. So ultimately, not in a ton of positions to make plays. He makes plays when they're presented to him, of course, but not the down in, down out, just game wrecker that Tuska has been. All right, we're going to non-trade this one just so you understand. Newcomer of the year, so somebody that wasn't getting snaps a season ago. I'm going to go with my guy, Jimmy Kaporis, again, filling that Darius Shepherd role in the slot, big time on third downs. Was hoping to maybe see a little bit more of him as a punt returner, but Trevor Height has done such an excellent job. Any other freshmen or transfers that have really looked, you know, good to you or have stuck out in your mind, Trev?
So, yeah, Jimmy third down. Yeah, it was back and forth between him and Kobe Johnson. So because of you giving Jimmy third down the nod, I'm going to go with Kobe. Just because I did not expect this kid to do the things that he has done, he has added a dynamic side to the offense that I did not expect. And it has been fun to watch him progress throughout the season because you can clearly tell that he has gotten better every week and every opportunity that he gets the football.
Yeah, he was a guy I absolutely expected to redshirt and was just too good for them to do that. Absolutely. Would he be your biggest surprise of the season? Because I think he's kind of up there for me as far as the things that you were not expecting.
Well, I mean, yeah, just simply because of the depth of that room. It's not because you don't doubt his ability. I mean, we're not at practice every day. I'm sure we would have seen it well ahead of time, like the coaches have, and the reason that they've given him the opportunities that they have. So he's clearly doing it every day. He's not just doing it on Saturdays. Because you don't just get those opportunities as a true freshman, especially when you weigh 100, I don't even know how much he weighs, but it's not a lot. So I know Kramer's getting on him about it, but the kid has just showed out every time he has had the opportunity. He's third in all-purpose yards. Going up here in rushing, he is – where's he at? I mean, he's not high on the list, but the kid – has been a complete surprise in addition to an already deep backfield. And he's contributed in more ways than I think you would expect for a true freshman for a room that deep.
Yeah, my biggest surprise of the season has been the wide receivers. I've just been so impressed, specifically with Phoenix Sproles and Christian Watson. These are guys, you know, that had a chance, obviously, to play with an NFL level quarterback in Easton Stick last season. And not that they, you know, played poorly, but quite obviously Darius Shepherd was kind of option A, option B, and option C. And if there was an option D, it was probably a tight end. And so what we have seen is just how good, how much Noah Pauley has done to get these two young studs ready, because Phoenix and Watson are just incredible as far as from where they were, you know, with their total receptions, total impact on the game last season, to being absolutely dependable down in, down out options. I just think it's incredible what they've, you know, been able to do.
So not just the athleticism that they show, because that's what fans typically see, watch them on run plays. And watch them finish plays and watch them get into people's faces. That's championship football. And when your receivers are doing that, you put yourself and your offense in a position to do much more than just be a run-first offense. And it's a lot easier said than done, and it makes a lot of sense, and it's almost a no-brainer, but you'd be shocked at how many teams don't do it. When I tell you in our receiver room, another hashtag back in my day, we used to make fun of teams and their receivers when we were scouting defenses, and we'd watch certain plays, and when receivers wouldn't finish or they would just kind of walk off the ball in a run play, we would laugh at them and make fun of them because we knew that that was not good football. We knew it was football that wasn't quality of playing to the level that we could do. And those guys are clearly in the same train of thought that we were back then. And seeing that is incredible. And they're taking the athleticism to a new level. At the young age that they are, it is even more incredible. So, like you said, to piggyback, didn't expect that type of season from that room. So it's credit to the coaching. It's credit to the maturity of the kids and it's a credit to the leadership that they have as players. Proud of that group. Fully expect them to keep beating up on secondaries throughout the playoffs where it's a lot of man coverage and letting the most athletic and the best man win.
All right, last question, and then we'll get out of here. Does anyone before Frisco come within 21 points?
Oh, no. And the only reason I'm saying that is because of 2013. Our closest playoff game was 28, which is, of course, the championship. I think you're going to see a very similar playoff run this year.
And I'm with you. That's why I kind of posited the question. And I got to say, not only that, but the draw. That's what has really my attention is the draw. Who these guys are going to play, I don't think are tremendously quality football teams. And it's something that, boy, I just think they're going to run to Frisco. I think it'll be a competitive game, depending on who makes it. But I think it'll be a competitive game down there. This is going to be, I think, potentially a cakewalk style run to Texas. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate you hanging out this long. Check out those specials as they come on Black Friday, on Cyber Monday. Become a VIP member of the Bison Report. It's huge for us. I promise you, allows us to provide you with some of this awesome content that we have been able to expand ever since my team took over. And hey, let people know about the podcast. Get on iTunes, get on wherever, give us a 5-star review and give us a written review. And that helps us show up a little bit higher on the list when folks are looking for, NDSU stuff to listen to. So we would really appreciate that. Hey guys, thanks one more time and go Bison.